The title of today's sermon is Peace and Safety, and I'd like to begin in Isaiah chapter 1. There's been so much in the news recently that it's hard to put things in their proper perspective. There are momentous happenings taking place even as we speak. As Christians, we must be so careful not to get caught up in this world. We're not a part of it. With all the chaos and confusion in the world, God warns us that the time is soon coming when we will have to be particularly cautious when evaluating world conditions. I was reminiscing with an elderly pastor in God's church this past week, and he goes way back. He's 15 years older than I am. He came into the church before I did. He's seen a lot of history. And we were lamenting the downfall of our country from its pinnacle of world prominence and leadership that we once enjoyed. And we thought, when did we reach that pinnacle? And we placed the beginning date of our demise from our zenith or peak of prominence to be somewhere around 1947, maybe 1950. And we both agreed. We've been descending as a nation ever since. England before us had brought the rule of law and order to a world devoid of civilization. And wherever the constitutions were based on God's laws, nations prospered. My friend and I both agreed that the tide has long turned on the blessings of Abraham that God promised to us more than 2,520 years ago. Paraphrasing the blessings and cursings chapters of Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, my friend characterized the violations of God's law as he has seen it by saying that we have brought about a self-imposed disaster on America and on England as well. Herbert Armstrong often quoted these verses in Isaiah as applying to our day. Let's begin here in Isaiah chapter 1 and verse 2. Hear, O heavens, and give ear, O earth, for the Lord hath spoken. I have nourished and brought up children, and they have rebelled against me. Verse 3. The ox knows his owner, and the donkey his master's crib. But Israel does not know. My people does not consider. Verse 4. Ah, sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a seed of evildoers, children that are corruptors. Brethren, as we read through this, think of our nation, modern Israel. They have forsaken the Lord. They have provoked the Holy One of Israel unto anger. They've gone away backward. Verse 5. Why should you be stricken anymore? Will you revolt more and more? The whole head is sick. Pick up on that, brethren. God says, speaking about us, our nation, our people, America, England, and all of our associated brethren, the whole head is sick, the whole heart faint. Verse 6, from the sole of the foot even unto the head, there's no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. They've not been closed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment. Nobody is addressing the solutions. The whole head is sick. Brethren, we have seen 8 years of godless leadership of America, which plunged this country into an immoral quagmire from which we will never fully recover. Yes, God occasionally sends a strong man, like a Samson, in the days of the judges of Israel, to delay our ultimate demise. But the damage has been done. It's been done to the good morals that once made this nation a great nation. We read, the whole heart is faint. The spirit of justice and fairness has turned to greed and to bitterness. I'll give you just a few examples. The IRS, the Internal Revenue Service, has become politically corrupt to its core with a malignant cancer that cannot be rooted out. They discriminate against those who hold on to the vestiges of our founding fathers' principles. Another example, the DOJ, the United States Department of Justice, has become so corrupt at its head. Let me use the words of Isaiah. Don't turn there, brethren. I'll read them to you. Isaiah 59:14. You can put those in your notes. But the Department of Justice has become so corrupt at its head that judgment is turned away backward and justice stands afar off. For truth is fallen in the street and equity cannot enter. Verse 15. Yes, truth faileth, and he that departs from evil, he makes himself a prey. And the Lord saw it, and it displeased him that there was no judgment. Let me give you another example of the whole head being sick. The FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the once highly trusted domestic intelligence and security service of the United States, is no longer trustworthy. I could go on with the CIA and the EPA. We don't have time to go through all the disappointing performances of the many heads of the many departments entrusted with the sacred duty of protecting our domestic resources and national blessings. The whole head is sick. The whole heart is faint. Where is our nation headed? What will be the consequence of departing from the way of our living God? God himself tells us the answer. He gives us the result. Here is where America and England are headed. Continuing in Isaiah chapter 1, now verse 7. Your country is desolate. This is where we're headed, brethren. Your cities are burned with fire. Do you believe it? Think of some of the major cities around the country. Your land, strangers devour it in your presence. While you're looking, in your eyesight, it is devoured. It is desolate, as overthrown by strangers. In God's church, in the past, we sort of had a narrative that said that things would be going along normally, and bang, all of a sudden, we'd be blown up, captured, carried away rapidly into captivity, if we survive at all. Let's turn over to 1 Thessalonians 5, and let me ask you to put your marker there, because we'll come back to it. Of course, so many people in the church back in the olden days weren't too worried about such things because they expected to be sitting snugly, maybe smugly, in the place of safety. Never mind the fact that they were not busily qualifying for the requisite overcoming of Satan by loving not their lives unto the death. You can read about that in Revelation 12 and verse 11. The title of today's sermon comes from this verse we're about to read in 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 3. For when they shall say, peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them as travails upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape. The King James uses the translation sudden destruction. But brethren, it's not so much instantaneous, all of a sudden, as it is unexpected. The Greek would render unawares. Unawares in Luke 21 and verse 34. Just unexpected that that day comes on you unawares. Now the purpose of today's sermon is to demonstrate that destructive forces are already in place and have been a long time in coming. It can cause us to feel good about our nation when we finally see our leaders taking a strong stance against those who have been our sworn enemies in the past after so long a time. And this has recently taken place with North Korea. I was 7 years old when the Korean War broke out on the 25th of June, 1950. The North Korean Communist Army, led by Kim Il-sung, that's the grandfather of Kim Jong-un, so much in the news these days. Kim Il-sung crossed the 38th parallel and invaded non-communist South Korea. Now, when I think about Korea, I always think of it being bitter cold, but actually, it's about the same latitude as St. Louis, Missouri, the 38th parallel. North Korea could be, God willing, a fertile and prosperous country. As Kim Il-sung's North Korean army armed with Soviet tanks, quickly overran South Korea. The United States came to South Korea's aid. That war is now finally slated to come to an end. What brought North Korea Chairman Kim Jong-un to the denuclearization table? The answer is sanctions. Sanctions brought him to the table. Strong sanctions brought him to the negotiating table. This month, primarily in response to those very hard and restrictive sanctions on imports and exports, North Korea anxiously agreed to come to the negotiating table. Not only tough sanctions enforced by the United States, but to me, surprisingly, those sanctions of China and Russia in response to the United Nations Security Council, which unanimously approved those tough new sanctions against North Korea because of its launch of a ballistic missile that Pyongyang, capital of North Korea, says is capable of reaching anywhere on the U.S. mainland. The leaders of North and South Korea have committed themselves to the complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula and pledged to bring a formal end to the Korean War after 68 years of hostile relationship. Brethren, we suffered 900,000 casualties in the 3 years of active engagement. Now, North Korea is financially destitute. Here's something that you can do in your spare time. Go online and look at a satellite image of Korea at night. There's an incredible difference between North Korea and South Korea. But brethren, let's look at this spiritually. God intended from the very beginning that Israel be a light and a blessing to the nations of the world. Can we help North Korea in any way? We would like to see the impoverished people of North Korea prosper like all the other free nations. Kim Jong-un, he's a chairman, he's the leader, some people call him the premier. He would certainly like to have his family's dynasty preserved with a security promise from the United States. One that would say, no matter what happens, we'll come to your aid, we'll make sure that you stay in power, that you're not overthrown like Gaddafi was in Libya. We'll take care of you. He would like something in writing, secure, with a promise. I don't know how that's going to be done. That area of the world has long had a difficult time. When I was in high school, the first book that I remember reading was titled 30 Seconds Over Tokyo. It was about Jimmy Doolittle's retaliation raid on Japan that came less than a year after the Japanese had bombed Pearl Harbor. He had a squadron, or a bunch, I don't know, as many as you could get on a carrier, I suppose, of B-24 bombers. And those B-24s flew 2,000 miles from an aircraft carrier, and they overflew Japan, dropping their bomb loads on Tokyo. And they crash-landed in China when they ran out of fuel. What the world does not know very well is how brutal the Japanese were in retaliation to the Chinese who aided the survivors of Doolittle's raid. Japan worked up a horrendous retaliation. Japan's germ warfare, their bio attacks, killed hundreds and hundreds of thousands, up to a 500,000 villagers and farmers who had helped the downed American flyers. The effects of that germ warfare lingers today. And that was the only documented mass use of germ warfare weapons in modern times that I know of. Scholars say that we'll never know exactly how many were killed from that germ warfare. Chinese, American, and other Western physicians who have examined the survivors documented their histories and photographed their wounds. Those people claim that they are the victims of the most gruesome biological warfare attacks in modern history. I didn't know about this when I read 30 Seconds Over Tokyo. That was something that I didn't understand about the retaliation. For those of you who would like to know more about this horrendous subject, just go online and search Jimmy Doolittle and Unit 731. Only now that China has emerged as Asia's leading power has it begun to highlight Japan's biological germ warfare crimes against it. The focal point of that effort is the Unit 731 Museum. And they built a museum there in China. It's just south of the city of Harbin in Manchuria. It's worse than anything that Hitler did to the Jews. Upwards of 12,000 Chinese prisoners perished in cruel, blood-curdling experiments that Unit 731 performed on Japanese-occupied Manchuria. Some of those young survivors have lived to this day. They're still alive. Those experiments were too cruel and gruesome to describe here in a sermon. I only want to mention it to demonstrate man's inhumanity to man. It seems to spring up during times of war, and it's destined to spring up again. It's going to be worse in the last days. My grandmother lost two brothers in World War I to German nerve gas. Again, man's inhumanity to man. Don't believe, brethren, for a moment that that's totally in the past and that we're never going to have to deal with that problem again. We are fast approaching the end time when Satan will fully unleash his fury and his wrath as the force behind the beast power. Paul told Timothy, "This know also, that in the last days perilous times shall come." And in Daniel, it's read this way, "There shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, even to that same time." I want to talk to you today specifically about China. I want you to keep your eye on China. The Bible has precious little to say about China specifically. The passage in Ezekiel, written some 2,500 years ago, informed Mr. Herbert Armstrong with an accurate forecast. And I'll just read it. It's in Ezekiel 38 and verse 2. "Son of man, set your face against Gog in the land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, and prophesy against him." Referring to Ezekiel 38:2, Mr. Armstrong wrote back in the April 1981 Plain Truth magazine, "There is general agreement among some students of prophecy that Gog, in the land of Magog, is the vast regions of northern Eurasia extending from the Baltic to the Pacific, including modern Russia and China." Now, here at home, we're pretty well aware that the United States trade deficit has grown to an unsustainable figure. Huge numbers that we can't comprehend. We, as America, are deeply and hopelessly in debt to foreign nations. We are the world's most mighty nation. And we can easily get to thinking that we've made ourselves rich and powerful by our own hand, by our own will. God wants us to be able to deal with other nations from a position of strength. His strength and not our own. Perhaps you've heard of the new 4,735-mile-long Silk Road. There's a new Moscow to Beijing railroad by way of Mongolia, Trans-Siberian route. It's a 6-day trip, but it's turning into an important trade route. United Nations Ambassador Nikki Haley, just a month or so ago, well, I think it was at the turn of the year, put together the support of Russia and China in supporting the severe sanctions against North Korea to force them to the denuclearization table. Isn't it surprising, it is to me, that the United States finds itself in the same bed with China and Russia in a bold move to denuclearize the entire Korean Peninsula? We usually don't find ourselves on the same side of the table, or as I just put it, in the same bed with China and Russia. And brethren, that's not my allegory, but it is God who says to us that the time is coming that we will not be able to make ourselves attractive to other nations, be it China, be it Russia, no matter who they are, no matter how hard we try. Jeremiah chapter 4 and verse 30. God refers to treaties and alliances and these kinds of covenants and agreements. He sometimes used the word lovers, as I said, in the same bed with China and Russia. Jeremiah 4 in verse 30. Here's what God says. He says, when you are spoiled, that means not like a spoiled child, but when somebody has taken all of our wealth and all of our good things. When you are spoiled, what will you do? Though you clothe yourself with crimson, get painted up with red lipstick and so forth. Though you deck yourself with ornaments of gold. Though you rent your face with cosmetics. In vain shall you make yourself attractive. Your lovers will despise you. They will seek to kill you. They will seek your life. When our nation looks to other nations for security and prosperity, instead of looking directly to God, God equates that disloyalty with infidelity toward Him. We have cheated on God. God considers alliances and leagues and treaties with ungodly nations to be a betrayal of His love. God says it's unfaithfulness, spiritual harlotry, spiritual adultery, and He refers to those foreign nations as lovers. Let's turn over to Judges chapter 2. God says that our lovers are going to turn against us, turn on us as we have betrayed Him. God says they will betray us. Your lovers will despise you. They will seek your life. Do you know, brethren, that today the United States of America pays its lovers as if we were visiting prostitutes, funding and providing military equipment and supplies to its coalition partners? Judges 2 and verse 2. Here's what God says. You shall make no league, no treaty, no alliance with the inhabitants of this land. You shall throw down their altars. But you've not obeyed my voice. Why have you done this? Brethren, let's face the reality. To placate the masses of the people in the United States, our government has made America's official policy, has made our official stance, multiculturalism, which states that all religions and strange gods must be mixed together and treated equally. It is a not too well disguised attempt to make God and religion pretty much meaningless in a secular nation. Those countries with which we have treaties are going to turn on us. They are going to destroy this nation. Look up and down your block. Look at your little town. Look at your state. Look at the big cities. They are going to be cut down. We've seen the World Trade Centers fall. Picture our nation in that same way. God says that the soon coming national punishment is His retribution for rejecting Him and disdaining the tremendous blessings that He has bestowed upon us. We will be utterly betrayed by our allies. Jeremiah chapter 30 and verse 14. These are the words of God. Jeremiah 30 and verse 14. All your lovers have forgotten you. They don't look for you. They don't seek you. For I have wounded you with the wound of an enemy, with the chastisement of a cruel one, for the multitude of your iniquity. Mea culpa, mea culpa, mea maxima culpa. We are at fault. It's through our own fault. Because, concluding verse 14, your sins were increased. We are heaping sin upon sin in this nation in our rejection of God. You can put this one in your notes, brethren. Lamentations chapter 1 and verse 2. Speaking of America, speaking of England, among all of her lovers, she has none to comfort her. We are living in a time of unprecedented peace and prosperity. God says so. He has poured out the blessings of Abraham on us. You count the servants in your kitchen, the appliances, the stove, the refrigerator, the lights, the hot and cold water. I can go on and on. In the food, the vegetables that are at your fingertips, even in the cold of winter. We have prosperity. God has blessed us, not because of our own inherent greatness, not because we're great, but because of His covenant with Abraham. As He said, I'll make of you a great nation. I'll bless you. I'll make your name great. You shall be a blessing. And God kept His promise to Abraham and made us a great and a wealthy people. God expected ancient Israel, and He expects us today also to depend on Him entirely, Him alone for our every need. Israel was told not to make a military treaty, neither a defense alliance. And even God went so far as to tell them not to enter into a trading confederation with other nations. God expressly forbade Israel from entering into alliances and leagues and covenants with their neighbors for the purpose of security or power or strength or religion or commerce. God said in Leviticus 26 and verse 12, I will walk among you and will be your God. What else could we possibly need? You shall be my people, God says. Do not look to others to protect and sustain you, is what God is saying. Let's turn over to Exodus chapter 23. The Bible cannot be any clearer as to how God regards treaties when it comes to foreign nations. If we look to God, God will protect us. If not, our lovers will betray us. The Assyrians will lead the attack on the modern Israelitish nations of the United States and Britain and Australia and Canada and Australia, the English-speaking peoples around the world. Exodus 23, verse 32. We'll read 32 and 33. Exodus 23, 32. You shall make no covenant with them, nor with their gods. They shall not dwell in your land, lest they make you sin against me, God says. For if you serve their gods, it will surely be a snare unto you. And guess what? That's exactly what we're doing. Do you believe God when He says it's going to be a snare unto us? We're to rely on God. God will work it out. God will give us the strength. God would bring our enemies to their knees. Israel, however, chose to enter into covenant agreements with surrounding nations for the purpose of creating secure and prosperous treaties with its neighbors. They felt safe. They felt rich. God had warned Israel not to enter into those alliances and treaties, but rather to look to Him for protection and blessings. Historically, alliances have not been instrumental in preserving peace. It seems, in fact, that immediately prior to most major wars, there's a rapid realignment of treaties and alliances for the sake of strengthening strategic power. Brethren, we do not want to become complacent when we know that all is not going to end well. China is rapidly buying up vast properties in this country with their huge trade surplus. Do you know your neighbors? You might check. The Chinese are coming to America in hordes. I wonder if there might be 10 on the same Social Security number sometimes. I think they bring in boatloads. We see it happening in other nations where they have coyotes and they bring people in trucks and things. But I believe that China is bringing them in by the millions. If you do a study at how fast some Chinese towns or expanding, it just seems beyond belief. Deuteronomy chapter 28. Brethren, it is too late to stem the tide. China is investing in America. They're immigrating with untold numbers. They're buying businesses. They're buying homes, farmland, real estate, infrastructure, and natural resources. It's all over the place. And you don't hear much about it. You got to go looking for it. But China is foreclosing on America. The United States has got deeply in debt. But China has made billions, if not trillions, off of the deal. And they need to invest it somewhere. And they know where to invest it. Deuteronomy 28 and verse 43. Let's hear the words of God so you can't say, oh, that's just your opinion, Warren. Deuteronomy 28 verse 43. The stranger, or the foreigner if you prefer, that is within you on your land shall get up above you very high. Okay, I speak English, grew up with a little French around me. My mother was French speaking, Sharon was French speaking, but we speak English in America. This says that the foreigner, and we'll identify him as we go on, that is within you shall get up above you very high. We're not talking about the local constable or the mayor. We're talking about very high, God says. And what's going to happen to us? And you shall come down very low. Now, those are the words of God. Just yesterday, the United States announced an aggressive new set of tariffs against China, setting a 25% import tax on $50 billion worth of industrially significant technologies. That's mostly electronics imported from China. That sounds like a lot of money to me. It's more than pocket change. But that's only one-tenth of 1 year's annual $500 billion trade deficit with China. The money is going out like in a wash tub and coming back like in an eyedropper from China. We have a terrible deficit. But in return, what else would they say? China has threatened to retaliate against such tariffs, stoking fears, you know, on Wall Street of a far-reaching and unpredictable trade war between the countries. But brethren, I submit that's only a lover's spat. Again, using God's analogy of lovers. It's just a spat. They need us. We need them. We trade untold hundreds of billions with China every year. It's obviously a love-hate relationship. We hate that China is a communist nation with a dismal human rights record, but we love the cheap goods, the cheap products, the things that we get from China. China's economy is now close to parity with America's economy. But due to current economic policies, we find ourselves here in America almost at a standstill. Yes, we've been bragging on 4%, 4.8% growth and so forth. But compared to China, we're the tortoise and they're the hare. They just go zipping right past us. Meanwhile, China is growing rapidly. And they're likely to surpass the United States very, very soon. I've seen some projections of saying by 2025 they'll pass up the United States. The United States' technological edge is all but gone. China now consumes more energy than the United States, even though our overall economy is still about twice that of China. And yet, the Chinese economy already has roughly the same amount of purchasing power as the United States economy does. China is rising. They're getting up high. And America is in an advanced state of decline. The jobs have left, not by the hundreds, not by the thousands, not by the hundreds of thousands, but by the millions. China is investing in America, in the businesses, in the homes, in our very fertile farmlands, the good land, the high-end land, the high-end real estate, the infrastructure, even natural resources, pipelines, oil reserves, gold reserves. They're buying it up like it's going out of style. Did you know that every 10th home in California, how many people in California? Raise your hand if you know. 30 million. That's right. That was the last count that I heard of. It might be approaching 35 right now. Every 10th home in California is being purchased by a Chinaman. A $7.2 billion contract to construct a new bridge between San Francisco and Oakland. It was awarded to a Chinese firm. Why not American firm? Why not American steel? Think of all those jobs that that would have produced. There's very little United States steel or jobs in that deal. China now produces 11 times as much steel as the United States does. You look at that vector. That tells you the direction that you're headed. The economic colonization of America has begun by foreigners. We've seen near financial collapse a few times recently. China is now the leading manufacturer of goods in the entire world. Now, this will surprise you, brethren. I thought about this in World War II. You don't want to have to write off to your enemy and say, send me a box of ball bearings, because they're not going to do it in time of war. But a recent investigation by the United States Senate Committee on Armed Services found that more than 1 million counterfeit Chinese parts had entered into our United States military equipment in the Department of Defense supply chain. More than 1 million pieces. We'd be bad off if those failed at a crucial time, wouldn't we? China is a godless communist nation. No matter how pretty and how appealing they are trying to make themselves, but they are a godless nation. They're a communist nation, and they would love to take over the leadership of the world. Yes, they're really buying into our kind of economics, especially capitalism, because there are many, many billionaires in China. Look that up. You want a surprising statistic. How many billionaires in China? China has a population of 1.5 billion with a B. Compare that to our population that is just on the high side of 300 million with an M. Do you know a declining United States dollar spells disaster for China's economy? China does not want our dollar to fail. Let me give you another one of those vectors that'll tell you which way China is going and which way we are going. China uses more cement, as to make concrete roads and dams, more than the rest of the world combined. We're talking big. I'm trying to find some numbers that you can get your mind around. But brethren, you know that we're borrowing as much money from China to finance our addiction to cheap goods. It's an exponential debt the way it's going up. And China is happy to lend to us. Deuteronomy 28:44. I want to read a little further than I read a while ago. A while ago I read 43. Deuteronomy 28:43. The stranger that is within you, get up very high and you're going to get down very low. He shall lend to you, God says. Well, how did God know that? You check the newspapers. Check your internet. How much are we borrowing from China? He shall lend to you. You not lend to him. Doesn't work both ways. He shall be the head and you're going to be the tail. You ever go down to the bank and try to borrow a bunch of money and the banker goes, no, you don't have quite enough collateral. That's the tail. You can't borrow anything. Back in 1983, that's the year that I went to Ambassador College. Does not seem like ancient history to me. The United States of America was still a creditor nation. Can you imagine? We were even Stephen. I could go back a little further and tell you when we were still on the gold standard and how good the dollar was. That was at the time of Nixon. Some of you can remember back that far. But in 1983, we kind of went over the top side of the roller coaster. We began a downhill slide. The borrower is always the servant of the lender. And we should have never allowed ourselves to get into so much debt. I don't know how that happened. I don't know who was at the helm. I know it was greed and it was covetousness and it was lackadaisicalness and all kind of things in our house and in our Congress and in our presidencies. But we really dropped the ball. And we've gone into so much debt, brethren. My personal belief is that we'll never come out of it. We're passing it on to our children and our grandchildren as we speak, and they'll never be able to recover out of it. And now we're going to pay the price. China owns about $1.5 trillion of our U.S. debt and about $3.5 trillion in other dollar-denominated assets. I guess that's some kind of bonds. Those numbers are too big to get your mind around. But that's what they own. They need to invest it somewhere. Let's try to put it in some terms that are a little closer to home. We are borrowing $4 billion, with a B, dollars each day to pay our bills. You try that on your credit card. If you were to just keep borrowing and borrowing your credit card, you know what would happen. You'd get overextended, go into bankruptcy, and so forth. That works with nations, too, brethren. You can't just blow up a balloon and blow and blow and blow and go, oh, you know what? It's never going to pop. It's going to pop. The cost to the United States is of a magnitude that we cannot imagine. Let me give you another one. We pay more than $100 million a day in interest alone on the debt that we owe them. According to an American Free Press article, in addition to already owning vital ports, we're talking about what the Chinese own, in Long Beach, California. Long Beach is a major port where Merck comes in with so many containers on a cargo ship, it would make your head spin. I think you can't pull it with one train. It's train loads. And trains can pull 100 cars at a time easily. In Boston, Massachusetts, they own some ports up there. The China Ocean Shipping Company is eyeing major ports on the East Coast and the Gulf of Mexico. Maybe they've purchased them already. This is dated a little bit. China also owns access to ports at the entry and exit points of the Panama Canal. That's a chokehold on one of our sea gates, the Panama Canal. We built it. We owned it. We gave it away. Put a check mark by that, brethren. What's behind that? And due to financial and fiscal woes plaguing many American cities and states, U.S. legislators have been actively seeking out Chinese investors. They are going to their paramour. They are going to their lovers. They want to pay them. This is what God says don't do. Let me give you one case that's close to home. Some of you know that my wife and I, Sharon and I, we raised our children in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Well, recently, Mayor Kip Holden of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, he offered the Chinese government ownership and operating rights to a new tollway system if the Chinese would just provide the funding to build it. You see, just y'all come on in, bring the money, build it, y'all own it. All we'll do is just drive on it. That's giving the Chinese another piece of American real estate and control of it, because they can put up toll booths. It's not so many years ago that we built a bridge in Louisiana, and we put a toll on it. And in just a few years, we paid for it and took the toll off. I do not believe the Chinese will ever take the toll off. It's like rent. It goes on and on. They've already done this toll road business in Indiana. They sold toll roads to a company who used Chinese money to buy it, pay for it. It was recently announced that the Federal Reserve, now that's an organization that you could give a few sermons on and still not know what's going on behind those closed doors. The Federal Reserve will now allow Chinese banks to buy up American banks. You put your money in the bank, you're putting your money in China's hands for them to do with it as they wish. God will break the pride of our power. You can look up that scripture, brethren. Let's go over to Isaiah chapter 9. Isaiah chapter 9 and verse 14. Therefore the Lord will cut off from Israel head and tail, branch and rush, all in one day. In Deuteronomy 28, it told us how it's going to happen. They're going to get up very high, we're going to get down very low. Let's read on there in Deuteronomy 28, verse 44, where we saw that they'll lend to us and we won't lend to them. They'll be the head, we'll be the tail. Verse 45, Deuteronomy 28 and verse 45. Moreover, all these curses, see, God tells you what they are. To the legislatures, it sounds like a blessing, but it's a curse. All these curses shall come upon you and shall pursue you and overtake you until you be destroyed. Pop, went the balloon. because you hearkened not unto the voice of the Lord your God to keep his commandments and his statutes which he commanded you. Oh, you might say, oh, that'll never happen. Well, how did God know so long ago that they'd be lending to us and we wouldn't be lending to them? We would be the borrowers. God gets it right 100% of the time. Deuteronomy 28 and verse 46. They shall be unto you for a sign and for a wonder and upon your children forever. Verse 47. Because you served not the Lord your God with joyfulness and with gladness of heart for the abundance of all things. Verse 48. You want to see something scary? Don't you like going to a restaurant and they come up and they have a cute little waitress outfit on and they say, what would you like? And they bring you anything that you want. They serve us in a restaurant. Notice what God says in verse 48. Therefore shall you serve your enemies, which the Lord shall send against you in hunger. Yeah, you wait on them to get fat, but you don't have anything to eat. In thirst and in nakedness and in want of everything. You have nothing. And he shall put a yoke of iron upon your neck. Yes, a shackle. Until he has destroyed you. It's not going to be pleasant. You go back and read in your Bible when Nebuchadnezzar, you read both accounts, when Assyria came in, when Babylon came in, when they put their eyes out, when they put hooks in their mouth. That's what God's talking about here. It is coming. Do you speak Chinese? Deuteronomy 28 and verse 49. The Lord shall bring a nation, I have a little question mark here, China, against you from afar, from the end of the earth, as swift as the eagle flies, a nation whose tongue you shall not understand. It surprises me, brethren, but when I go on Google and search some of these things for a sermon like this, the answer is coming out in Sanskrit. For all I know, I can't tell what it is. It looks like a chicken walked on a piece of paper with ink. I can't tell what it's saying. And it's on my computer when I try to read some of this stuff. A nation whose language you cannot understand. That's who we're going to be working for. Verse 50, you want to know a little bit more about them? A nation of fierce countenance, which shall not regard the person of the old. I resemble that. Nor show favor to the young, you resemble that. No favor to anybody. You all get it in the neck. Verse 51, and he shall eat the fruit of your cattle. Yes, he'll be eating the steaks and the potatoes. You'll be eating grass like the North Koreans have been doing for a number of years. And the fruit of your land he shall eat till you're destroyed. You go out there and our great nation is a desert land, which also shall not leave you either corn or wine or oil or the increase of your cattle or flocks or your sheep until you're totally destroyed. Verse 52. And he shall besiege you from within. We saw that. He's going to be on the inside, owning towns, owning villages, owning the roads. He's going to besiege us from inside America. Interstate 10, Interstate 20, Interstate 30, Interstate 40, going up the line. Wherein you trusted throughout all your land, he shall besiege you in all your gates throughout the land which the Lord your God has given to you. You've given them to them. Verse 53. Brethren, do some research. Do some study. It's happening faster. I was surprised at the demographics that I saw of some towns, entire towns, that are changing their language. You go to the airports in some of those towns, as my wife and I had opportunity recently to do. And the language in the airport is in English and, oh no, not French and Spanish and, Italian, but in Sanskrit. I don't even know what it is. And that's posted in the airports already. There's so many of them coming into our nation. Okay, it gets really ugly here in verse 53. You shall eat the fruit of your own body, the flesh of your sons and your daughters, which the Lord your God has given you in the siege and in the straitness. You can go ahead and read some of that, brethren. Put this one in your notes. Revelation 9 and verse 16 says 200 million is the number of the armies. And Revelation 16 and verse 12 kind of gives you some idea of what part of the nations they'll be coming from, what part of the world. He poured out his bowl upon the great river Euphrates. Talks about prepared for the kings from the east. You can't get any more east than China. Herbert Armstrong once quoted these verses in reference to China. The United States is rapidly losing economic superiority to China, who violates the World Trade Organization's guidelines. They cheat, they lie, they steal. I'll touch on that just a little bit in a moment. Herbert Armstrong first spoke of a Russia-China axis back in the June-July 1934 issue of the Plain Truth magazine. He wrote back then, "Two great military powers will arise in the last days. One, the rival of the Roman Empire." We know how great and how long that lasted. "The other, Russia, with her allies, possibly China or Japan." Well, we can see a little bit better right now who it might be than he could back in 1934. Brethren, China's constant dream for centuries has been ultimate world conquest. China knows that in this highly industrialized age, she can accomplish this dream only with the help of Russia. So Russia is going to be there helping her. That's what Herbert Armstrong said in The Plain Truth, December 1959. China is now emerging as the biggest economy in the history of the world. They are huge. They got a huge landmass. They've got huge resources. They've got the rare elements. They've got everything for nuclear expansion. They're building aircraft carriers. And if you've looked lately, I'd like to ask the question of you, what is Beijing building in the South China Sea? They're greatly expanding their reach. An island can be the same thing as an aircraft carrier, and that's what China's doing. They're building these atolls that you could barely have a starfish on, and they're pumping up the sand and the shell, and they're building long runways on them. They are expanding air bases to newly built islands, and those islands are protected with that 12-mile boundary zone that you can't cross. This surprised me. The United States totally respects that 12-mile boundary and doesn't encroach on these little islands where China's building these runways, these airports. And just, I think just a few weeks ago, I saw where China flew a bomber into one of those new islands. A bomber, an airplane, loaded with probably equipment right now, but it extends far from their homeland. If you want to look up some of this, I'll give you a couple of hints. Look up on Google Earth, Fiery Cross and Mischief Reef, and just zoom down on them. China is in outer space more than anyone besides the United States right now. They have their own GPS system up there. They sure not going to rely on ours. They're perfecting space warfare. They're expanding their sphere of influence beyond the South China Sea, well down into the realm of the Philippines. And China has threatened the Philippines. They threatened Taiwan. They threatened Vietnam and Japan. Since China began its extensive land reclamation program in the South China Sea, and I think that started back in 2013, Beijing has focused on enlarging its presence and infrastructure beyond its region. It's growing. It's getting better. Xi Jinping, he's the leader of the Chinese right now. That's spelled X-I, I think, and pronounced Xi. Xi Jinping, he lies at the apex of the Chinese political system. His influence now permeates every level of government in China. He's the most powerful leader of China since Mao Zedong. You remember Chairman Mao? You count his millions that he killed. They are ruthless people. The year 2021, count on your fingers, not very far in the future, 2021, marks the 100th anniversary of the Chinese Communist Party's founding. And Chairman Xi, I don't know if he calls himself a chairman or president or what, but Xi Jinping clearly intends that in 2021, China will be the showcase of all of these things, their achievements, and their 100th century goals. They're going to be highlighting those things. They like to have their parades and be in the news. By that time, China expects to be the most powerful economy in the world. It's already there on the purchasing power parity basis and a lot of other parameters. Everything that I see makes it look like they even surpass us in a lot of different ways. They are, you can't call them an emerging world-class power anymore. They have arrived both in political and military terms. Brethren, let's not close our eyes to the mostly hidden hostile nature of China. China is undecidedly and enormously aggressive in the geopolitical, the military, and in the economic sense. China is stealing the United States blind of its intellectual property by its well-recognized and admittedly cyber warfare. They just go in and pickpocket everything in this country. I have a lot more that I can't cover today, but they are a terrible example of a sinister force that is pervading our country. China is simply helping themselves to our technology. Even our military technology, our planes and our ships and our nuclear resources. They are building aircraft carriers. China is making alliances and leagues with our enemies, like Iran, for example. They're not to be trusted. When China turns mean, okay, that's a phrase that I just coined. When China turns mean, right now, you can go to China. Go see the Great Wall of China. You can buy whatever you want in China, I imagine. There might be some restrictions, but they want to be nice. They want to appear nice. They want to use our golf courses. They want us to use theirs. They like our trade when we come over there as tourists. But I pointed out what it was like when Japan turned mean in World War II. We know what it was like when Hitler turned mean. When that spirit of war pervades China, when China turns mean, the West will try one last time for peace and safety. That's the title of today's message, peace and safety. And for a short while, everyone except God's true servants, everyone will believe that world peace has been achieved, but it's going to be a pseudo peace. Notice what Jesus says. And he says it to us. He's not saying it to the Chinese and he's not saying it to the politicians in Washington. Matthew 13 and verse 16. But blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. Brethren, it is not being pompous to say we can see where this is going better than the politicians of our country. This verse, Matthew 13, 16, tells us that the world cannot put it all together, but we, brethren, we know the plan of God. We are able to understand the end time sequence so much better. We must be careful because a single wrong assumption can throw us off terribly. Paul said it this way. Let's go to 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. Let's begin in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 and verse 16. We're talking about the end time, right when Christ comes back. Verse 16, for the Lord himself shall descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trumpet of God, and the dead in Christ shall rise first. Okay, you picture when this is. Verse 17, then we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. So shall we ever be with the Lord. From that time on we'll ever, always be with the Lord. Verse 18, wherefore, comfort one another with these words. But, you see, brethren, there is no chapter break here. Let's go right on into chapter 5. Notice what Paul says. This was all in one letter. There was not even a new paragraph. But of the times and the seasons, brethren, I have no need to write unto you. I don't need to tell you when this is going to happen. Verse 2, for you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. And we've heard that all of our lives. You can't know when God's coming back. You can't know when Christ is going to come back. You don't know when that trumpet's going to be. Going to be like a thief in the night. Going to sneak up on you. You won't have any idea. Okay, again, the title comes from this next verse, 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 3. For when they shall say peace and safety. You see, that's when everybody sat down. They've had their treaties, their alliances, their agreements, pushes come to shove, everything set aside. All of these other things will still be in place. Who will own the land? Who will control the military? Who will have the air bases? Who will have the resources? Who will have the power? Who will control the internet? You just fill in all the blanks. But they'll all sit down, and we've seen this recently, where powerful leaders come together and they shake hands and they fully intend to have peace and prosperity right now. And they'll say after this peace treaty is signed and everybody's praying for it and wanting it so bad, they'll come out and they'll hold their hands high and they'll say, peace and safety. Now we finally achieved it. We've inked the line. We've exchanged the treaties. We've got peace and safety. And Paul says, then unexpected destruction comes upon them. Okay, I changed it from the King James. It says sudden destruction. It's unexpected, brethren. It's been a long time in the making. Unexpected destruction. They don't expect it comes upon them as travails upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape. Look up that word sudden in your Strong's Concordance. See if you concur. For the world, brethren, it will be unexpected. Might be sudden too. But not for true Christians who will clearly expect it and see the destruction coming. Even today, we're looking at the destruction that's coming. 1 Thessalonians 4. Notice this, brethren. People don't read this far. But you, brethren, you're not in darkness, that day should overtake you as a thief. We don't have to be surprised. It's not going to be unexpected for us. Right now we expect it, and we see it drawing closer and closer. The point is that God intends for his people to know. No one else. They're not going to know. They think they got a good peace treaty, and it's going to last. Yeah, it'll last until the ink is almost dry. Our nation should be looking to God for peace and safety. But sadly, brethren, God is not in the picture. Verse 5, 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 5. You are the children of light and the children of the day. We are not of the night nor of darkness. Therefore, let us not sleep as everybody else is doing. This world is asleep. And I submit to you, brethren, a good portion of the church of God is also asleep. Let us not sleep as others do, but let us watch and be sober. And I'll add, be being Christians and all that that entails. Standing up for God's way and God's truth, no matter what. Verse 7, for they that sleep, sleep in the night. And they that are drunk are drunken in the night. Verse 8, but let us who are of the day, of the light, those who are enlightened, let us be sober, putting on the breastplate of faith and love, and for a helmet, the hope of salvation. Verse 9, for God has not appointed us to wrath. God doesn't want us to be in war. God doesn't want us to be angry. God does not want us to be a part of the meanness. He's appointed us to obtain salvation by our Lord Jesus Christ. We're not appointed to wrath. It's not our fight. We're to be separate from the world. We are in some very deceptive days just ahead of us, brethren. I'm speaking about religious deception. I see politicians lie and lie and continuously mislead the people. And people continue to empower them. It is so aggravating. It's so confusing. But the Bible tells us that men are coming on the scene that will have the power of Satan motivating them. You think it's bad now? You think you're frustrated now? How can we be able to deal with that spiritual deception? It's real, and it's at the door. How will we be able to survive? It will be only by the power of God's Spirit and the grace of God, and by keeping our nose in the Bible and being on our knees. There's no shortcut. We must do everything, make every sacrifice to stay close to God. Brethren, when you hear the words, peace and safety, don't you believe it.